from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on, well, maybe this music takes you back. I'm going to go even further back. May 9th, 1970 at the Eastman Theater in Rochester for the Friends in Love concert. And nearly 50 years later, almost every Rochesterian claims to have been there. The concert featured Chuck Mangione on flugelhorn, the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, Don Potter, Bat McGrath, Gap, Stanley Watson, Marvin Stamm, and Jerry Nywood, of course. And tomorrow night, if it's not Friends in Love, it's close. Bat McGrath will play what could be his final concert in Rochester. He's 73 years old, and Bat is dying. He has colon cancer, and he has decided not to undergo treatment for it. And doctors have told him that realistically, he has months to live. So Bat is taking the rare step of coming back to Rochester from his home in Tennessee in the winter. And the Lyric Theater probably wishes they had another several thousand seats because the show is sold out. So once again, everyone in Rochester will claim to have been there or wishes they could be tomorrow night. This hour, we look forward to having Bat on with us again. He's a Rochester Music Hall of Famer, and more importantly, he's really one of the most thoughtful people we know. But as you might imagine with Bat, getting ready for tomorrow night, got a lot of rest to do, and he is resting up this afternoon. He's hoping to rally his strength for that show. But we're going to talk about him behind his back with his friends, Doug Emblidge, 13 Wham News anchor, one of Bat's closest friends. We can talk about Bat behind his back.
Absolutely. This is a chance we won't be refuted. Exactly. Say whatever we want.
Exactly.
Even if it's not true.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate you being here. Jeff Spivak is a journalist, reporter, WXXI contributor, and certified bon vivant. Good enough?
Yeah.
Nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
I'm glad to talk about Bat.
Yeah. And Mike Black is a radio program manager for WXXI, who was there in 1970. Is that true?
I was 10 and was there. And at the same time, we got a chance when I moved back to Rochester to actually see the reprise of that concert in 2007, which was amazing.
I was there for that.
Yeah, that's great. So Mike's one of those people who can actually back it up. So before we kind of dive into the story of Bat McGrath, and really it's not just sort of this maudlin, you know, dealing with dying, which is what Bat is doing so beautifully and Doug Emblidge has reported on. And I think really beautifully. We'll get to that. But there's so much to celebrate about him and his career, Rochester music. And again, it could be Bat's final show. So I want to listen to what Jeff Spivak and Mike Black put together for us here as we look at Bat, his story, and the show tomorrow night.
Whoever thought we'd wind up here like this?
Cancer. A paralyzing diagnosis for anyone. When Bat McGrath was told on December 12th that cancer had moved from his colon and taken over his liver, he walked away from the extensive treatments that might extend his life for maybe another year and a half. He'll live his final few months on his terms. That includes a concert in Rochester, Saturday at the Lyric Theater. We're talking to Bat at his home in Nashville. Bat, why is it important for you to spend some of your valuable time with us?
Well, frankly, that was the first thing that I thought of. We decided that we would celebrate our final time together rather than mourn. And I immediately said, you know, I sure would like to play up there one more time. It's the essence, really, of, I don't want to say who I am, but it's all I've ever done. And it's, I'd like to do it one more time, at least.
In the late 1960s and early 70s, Bat and Don Potter were the toast of the local music scene. Their popular blues rock band, the Showstoppers, was briefly romanced by the legendary Columbia Records producer John Hammond. Their coffee house on Westridge Road, Hiley Morris's Alley, was the hot club where Chuck Mangione, Steve Gadd, and Tony Levin would jam until 4 a.m. McGrath and Potter wrote some of the material and played on Friends in Love, a Chuck Mangione concert, the album that helped launch Mangione's career.
Got my thumb hooked in my pocket. I got my fishing pole in line.
Both McGrath and Potter are in the Rochester Music Hall of Fame. Bet, you've heard from Don Potter.
Yes, we spoke a couple weeks ago, and it was powerful. You know, I remember the first song we sang together, sitting outside out back of his uncle's house in an old cemetery, and Don had a harmony guitar, and we sang Let It Be Me by the Everly Brothers, and that's when we realized how nicely our voices blended and what a great harmony singer Don was. Mm-hmm. We were inseparable. And so when he called, it wasn't about the afterlife or where I'm going. Don was deeply saddened, and so was I. But as I recall, I spent most of my time consoling him, which only made me feel worse.
Ed Bat released his first solo album, From the Blue Eagle, in 1977.
It's me, I'm at the Blue Eagle. Yeah, that's right, the redneck bar.
Your songs are the details of life, lines about sitting at a bar, lost in rearranging the change in front of you. I don't know anyone who hasn't engaged in that kind of idle moment.
Yeah, you know, I learned a long time ago, maybe it was just intrinsic, I don't know. I can't fix a car, I can't do a lot of things, but, you know, songwriting seemed to fit with me. And I learned a long time ago that there's not one thing, instead of trying to be important, I learned that I didn't have to be, because there's not one thing that I have done that millions of other people haven't done as well. So I learned that if I wrote about myself, I'm actually writing about them at the same time. And I guess that's been, you know, for the people that have heard and relate to my music, I guess that's how they relate, because it's stuff we go through.
Bat, are you afraid?
No. And that's a perfectly normal question. If you asked me before the diagnosis, I would have said yes. After the diagnosis, I mean, something, I can't explain it. And I've tried to all my good friends, because they all have those thoughts too. But the minute I heard it, I just went to a place of peace. It was like, all right, I'm not even thinking of afterlife or, you know, I don't know if there is. It doesn't seem to be my concern. My concern really is to keep living. You know what I mean? I like to say that, you know, I'm not dying. I'm living. I'm living every day. And no, I'm not afraid.
Thank you, Bat. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
A song cries out somewhere inside my head, a sound.
That's beautiful. Jeff, that's beautifully done.
Well done, Jeff.
And I want to ask both Jeff and Doug, who had to have these conversations with Bat. Is it, because you both have such affection for him, is it hard to talk to someone knowing that they're dying, but he still sounds exactly like Bat? So it almost doesn't really make sense that the person you're talking to is likely to be gone maybe before 2019 is over, if that makes sense, Jeff.
Yeah, he's handled this so elegantly.
Yeah.
And I guess he doesn't have a choice, but...
Well, sure he does. I mean, everybody's got a choice.
Well, he's got a choice, but, you know, he doesn't have a choice as to what's going to happen to him.
Yeah,
and I think we've all experienced being around people who have been diagnosed with cancer. I know last year I was around a few, and some have done well with it and some have not. And I'm just astonished. I just don't think that I can handle it with the grace that he's dealing with it. And his wife, Trish, are just, they've talked it through, and they know where it's going. And I guess we all have to be ready for it, but we all don't accept it, and he does.
I got a call from him. I was pulling into a Christmas party. It was a few weeks before Christmas. And there was a text. There had been a text the night before. And he said, can you call me? And I couldn't at the time. I said, can I call you tomorrow? I said, sure. And I got thinking, can you call? There's something going on. You know, I just knew. It was the middle of winter. He wasn't coming up here. You know, he never did that. And so I called him the next day. And it was right before I went into this Christmas party. I said, hey, sorry, I couldn't get you last night. He goes, oh, no problem. Hey, I'm dying. I'm like, oh, you get a bad cold? He said, no, I'm dying. And that's how matter of fact he was about it. And of course my heart stopped and my lump went into my throat, and I'm like, what? And he goes, and then he told me the story of how he would freely admit he was not a doctor goer And so he did not get the routine screening that probably could have bought him more years with his wife and his kids and his grandkids. But he goes, Doug, so the first thing he said to me, he goes, look, it's okay. I've had a wonderful life. And so the first thing I thought is I got to get down to see him. Because he'd invited me for years to go down and see my wife and I to go down to Nashville and hang out with him. And because you never have the time. I said, I'll be there on the 26th, day after Christmas. And I got my car and I drove down. And the whole way down, I'm thinking, how do I talk to him now? Because now I know he's dying. Where I never would think of how am I going to talk to him, because I always just talked to him. It was just, we were friends and we had good times and I'm a fan and all those things. And I got there and the first thing they hit me with, and I think maybe some text messages on the way along the lines of, hey, you know, I'm dying. If you could get here sooner, it would be good. I mean, that kind of humor, which was immediately kind of took that fear away, because they're reacting to it as I would think they would. They have always done things with this sense of humor, this almost kind of offbeat, weird kind of sense of humor that first made me uncomfortable, and then it made me very comfortable, because I just felt, okay, the fact is he's here now. He's here today, and I might be gone before he is, but any of us could be. I think, Jeff, you probably got the same sense. He's not just saying he's at peace with this. I think he truly is at peace with this. So talking to him, by the time I actually did the interview with him, I felt like I could ask him anything.
Yeah, the show sold out in like 30 hours.
30 hours,
and
yeah.
I accused him of using death as a career move. And he got it.
He said if I'd known it was going to be like this, I would have announced that I was dying years ago and gone on tour, you know? But that's the way he's handling it, and I truly believe, if you look at what he's done across his life, the adventures he's had, the connections he's made, the ups and the downs, he really does feel like he's had a full run.
And doing it his way.
Yeah.
I want to mention to our listeners that, as you know, all week we've mentioned that Bette was going to be here, and Bette would be here if he didn't need some rest this afternoon. So I think everyone can understand that. Planning to be ready for the concert tomorrow. But if you have already emailed or called and you wanted to talk to Bette or send a message, I'm going to task Doug Emlich with sending messages. So I'll collect your emails. Okay. I'll give them to Doug. Doug will make sure they get to Bette, because Bette is and again, this all sounds cliche, but he really is a sentimental, he cares. I think he cares about how people are moved and touched. And so if you wanted to send that message, we'll make sure that they at least get to Bette.
So, sure will.
So before we kind of work through some more of our listener feedback, though, listeners, if you want to share stories, if you claim you were at Friends in Love, I get it. We all say we were in 1970. You can call the program or you can email connections@wxxi.org. There are so many stories that are, we don't have to focus the whole hour on Bette and his what's coming next for him. Let's have a little fun looking back here. And there's so much I didn't know. Doug, you called me this morning and we were talking about, I didn't know he's a kung fu teacher.
Yes, he's I don't know what the title is, what his level of mastery is, but he actually counted among his students Felix Cavalieri of the Young Rascals, who lives in Nashville. And Bette, I don't know when he got interested or how, but I think it was probably in the 80s, the late 70s, early 80s. And he would tell you that was a tough time for him. He had gone through a divorce. He ended up, music wasn't happening for a while, and he ends up traveling on tour with Van Halen as a limo driver bodyguard. But
the stories he must have seen.
He could and should write a book. Just that's one of the great pleasures of seeing him play, is partly to hear him sing and play, and then to hear the stories in between about how these songs came to be and how, what the real life connection is for him.
Well, everyone's got a favorite there, and I'll ask all of you if there's a Bette song that sort of stands out. We've got some cuts that we can play. Jeff Spivak, is there one that comes to mind before others for you, for Bette McGrath?
Well, there are some classic Bette songs that he has to play when he comes here, but, some of his newer stuff, I really like Perfectly Flawed, which is, written about Trish, his wife. So things like that, and the minor details that he throws in there that bring these songs to life, about tying up your car muffler or chicken wire. I think we all did that. I had those kinds of cars, and so I can relate to those kinds of things perfectly. And like I had in that piece earlier about rearranging the pile of change. I mean, I can't think how many times I've done that. You know, Bat, he is very politically interested, but he doesn't write that way. And he saves that for ranting at the television. But, you know, for the most part, his songs are things that people can connect to and understand and have done themselves.
Hmm. Mike, what stands out to you in the collection?
I'll tell you, you know, I go back to, like, the first two albums, you know, the Blue Eagle and The Spy. And to me, these two records really kind of, like, totally just got absolutely hooked on his lyrics. I mean, we saw the Friends in Love concert as a 10-year-old. You know, it was a wow experience going to, you know, Eastman and seeing this and seeing Chuck and all these players and just being totally overwhelmed and immediately just getting involved. And then following both them, especially as you become a teenager and then can actually go out. And so going to see him play, going to see Don Potter. And remember that Don Potter used to have this club at 50 Chestnut for a while, and he'd perform like every week. And the thing that was really cool is he'd have all these guests. Sure. So you would have Don and Bat, you'd have Don and Chuck, you'd have who knows who happens to be in town just happened to pop in for the late set. And so for me, seeing some of these local songs that still hold true, I made a, you know, made a comment on Facebook about the fact that with Wegmans, the song Wegmans, which always was quirky and fun because it was local, but now that Wegmans is up and down in the East Coast, that should be re-released as a single and played in every market that Wegmans is in.
You want to listen? Let's listen to a little bit of that.
Nobody asked me, but I'm gonna say that I got a feeling or two. I'm skinny and I'm run down here living near downtown. I kind of think I need a shrink and I got the flu. I'll go cruise Wegmans, they're open all night. And check out that counter girl crew. Or maybe the laundromat, yeah, there's a good time. The one where that weaver goes to. Bummed at the phone bill and clean.
So you're right. Bat's missing some real commercial opportunities here. His book on his life with Van Halen on the road, his dying tour that could have been years, re-release in Wegmans. Bat, if you're listening, got some agents here willing to do some work for you. Doug, I know you can't really just grab one. A lot of the times I imagine if you really love Bat McGrath and great songwriting, it kind of depends on what mood you're in and how you're feeling.
I think so, and I think my connection real quickly, but I liked the fact that there were a lot of local references in this song. I grew up in Honeyoy Falls, and not far away from where my parents' house was and is, was this place where a guy named Stanley Watson lived. Stanley Watson was the guitarist who really taught Bat and Don to play. And I went to school with Stanley's kids, elementary school we're talking. This is 1969, so I'm 8 years old. And I would hear my parents talk about Chuck Mangione and talk about this up and coming guy and this Stanley Watson, this hippie who lived on, you know, in this old farmhouse, and then there were these guys, Bat McGrath and Don Potter, but I wasn't into it then, right? But then Friends in Love happened. I did not go. I did go to all three of them when they came back and reunited in the 2000s. But I'm in college at Syracuse, and I'm in the record store, and there's both of Bat McGrath's albums. I remember Record Theater on West Henrietta Road, Club 747. They had Bat McGrath's The Spy was one of their big above the main door, you know, they were pushing that album. So I knew, okay, this guy's doing something. I go off to college, I buy those two albums, and I start listening to, when he sings the first song, Spaced Out, on the dock, we were sitting there getting half crocked. That was a Canandaigua Lake story. And then he said, and on The Spy, he has Naples. That's a song about where he was living at the time. Naples, which is where I live now, or close to it. So I'm hearing all these, and then he talked about, I moved to Alexander Street where the people stay quite hot. Well, that was a reference to the Alexander Street I knew. And so that was the first kind of hook for me, was that he's singing about places I know and people I could identify with, and Wegmans and what have you. So that was my first love. So to pick out a song is tough, but that was, I remember, the hook that got me involved. But after that, I realized that even if he wasn't from my hometown, I would love him for the very reasons that Jeff was articulating, and that is that he was writing about stuff you can all relate to, whether it is rearranging a pile of change at the bar at the Blue Eagle or whatever. So I think one thing that Bat will tell you that he is a songwriter first, especially a lyricist. And the story that is my favorite and one of the favorite songs, I think, and he does do the song, but it became famous when Wynonna Judd did it, and that's Come Some Rainy Day.
Let's listen to a little bit of that, and then Doug's got the story behind this. Come Some Rainy Day is the song.
What good's a dollar without your baby sister? Two scoops of ice cream on a summer afternoon. We ran wild, and all we ever wanted was to rule the world between our house and school. We move on, put those dreams away, thinking that we'll find them come some rainy day.
So
that's Wynonna doing the song.
This is Wynonna, and Bat's biggest hit, right?
His biggest commercial success.
Commercial success.
Yeah, it's a great. Yeah, I mean, it's. But here's the story behind that song. Don Potter, his old partner, was with the Judds and was with Wynonna, and they were recording that day. And Bat was beaten. If you go to Nashville to be a songwriter, Bat can tell you that you are up against this corporate. You know, your song, we don't sing songs about that now, and you get your songs accepted, and if you do get your songs accepted by an artist, you have to give the artist half the rights, even if they didn't write the song. I mean, it's an unbelievable world. But he believed in this song that he'd written with a guy named Billy Kirsch, and he believed in it so much he called Don and really said, Don, I've got to get this song to Wynonna. And he did not. He was like a pit bull. He was not letting go of the guy's ankle. He said, I'm going to get this song to him. And he gets a call and says, she's recording today. She's taking a break for lunch. Be in the parking lot at such and such a time. And he has it on a cassette. And he had done a demo. And she came out and sat in his car, listened to the demo, walked back in there with it, gave it to her producer, and they're so good down there. They arranged it and recorded it that day. And that was one of Bat's, you know, just his persistence paid off, you know. And I was so glad that happened for him. And he had other songs that were successful, and he had other songs that went places, and certainly a solo career is what we remember here. But that story just stuck with me, that he believed in that song so much that he was going to make sure that it got to the person who should sing it, and Wynonna did a great job with it.
And, you know, the other thing is, too, if you look at what she did with that song, she owned that song. It was authentic. She made it hers. Which is something that also I think is a tribute to songwriters when they write a song and the artist actually then can embrace it fully, and she did. And there's some amazing videos that you should search for. One where she has her little sister Ashley at a concert, and Ashley just is sitting there with her head on Wynonna's shoulder as she sings a song. It's absolutely incredibly touching. Mm-hmm. And yet that came from Bat, which is, again, his connection, able to take these songs and put them together with authentic feeling and reality. That came from the songwriter. And, well, it really
and isn't that Spivak's point? Mm-hmm. If Bat McGrath is this observationist, this guy who understands how we live and what connects people, he can write songs that you didn't write it, but you can make it your own in a way that everybody watched Ashley put her head on Wynonna's shoulder thought, oh, that's hers. That's her song. Well, that's a Bat McGrath song. Mm-hmm. And in a moment, our second half hour, we'll talk a little bit about another song that I think Mike Black was saying you didn't realize that Bat wrote, that Don sang, She's Gone, at Friends in Love, right? Yeah. We'll get to that in a minute. Let me just grab a couple quick phone calls because people want to weigh in here. Larry in Rochester first. Go ahead, Larry.
Hi. First off, I'm really sick to hear that Bat is so sick with this disease. But on a lighter note, I was hoping to ask these questions. So, Bat, if you can hear me, I got a couple questions. Now, just a moment ago, we were talking about Wegmans, right? And I was wondering, which laundromat that Weaver goes to. Anybody know that?
I will ask him for you, Larry. And you know, that and the girl who lived down on South Main that he sings about in the song Naples. Her identity is also long going to be secret. It's kind of like Carly Simon not revealing who You're So Vain was about. There's a bunch of characters and places.
That's
in
like
that
Beethoven,
song.
Immortal Beloved. Who is it? We may never know.
I will ask. He may, you know, he may reveal. And I actually did have a woman, a friend of mine who lives down in Naples, had a theory about who that girl was that he was singing about. She lives down on South Main. I don't dare mention her name. He had a theory about that and asked Bat about it. And whether Bat was just playing along or not, said, that's right, that's who it was. I don't really think that's the truth, but it made the guy feel good.
There is a laundromat across from the East Ave Wegmans, just so.
It could be.
Okay.
So does anybody know if Bat got to walk alone with Maruda again?
We're getting real insider here.
Yeah.
Maruda was a song that he and Don were on a trip down in the Caribbean somewhere, and that was just a girl who caught their fancy, I think Bat's fancy, and then they wrote that song. And I don't know that he ever, I think he was pretty roundly rejected by her.
Rejection makes for good songs.
It does, yes.
Larry, thank you. What were you saying, by the way, Doug, that Bat had kind of two genres of songwriting?
Well, if I had to sum up, if you could put most of the category, he's very into solitude. And there were many years when he was alone, and then the relationship didn't go well. But the two actually go together, because once the relationship doesn't go well, you find yourself writing about solitude. So, but he also has some fun, happy stuff too. It's not all.
Oh, no question about it. Let me grab Bill in Pittsford next on the phone. Go ahead, Bill. Hi, Bill. Are you there? Go ahead. I don't.
Oh, it's me.
It is you.
I was calling Marla and myself owned a beautiful farm in Italy Valley, but it had previously belonged to Bat McGrath and Don Potter. Mm-hmm. And it's a place where Chuck Mangione was so inspired, he wrote "The Hill Where the Lord Hides." It's a beautiful place, and it always echoed with Potter and McGrath, the great guys that owned it, and then we got lucky and owned it. Mm. Just outside of Naples, beautiful place and beautiful memories. And I loved hearing Bat. We got to a bunch of his concerts up in Canandaigua and places, but The Hill Where the Lord Hides stands so happy for his and Don living there and me and my wife living there and anybody else that's so lucky to do so. So that's a tribute to Bat, wonderful place that he once lived and we did too.
Thank you for that, Bill. That's go ahead, Doug.
It's also the hill where the blue eagle hides too. It's right up within a couple miles of it. So
those are those little moments where that's where I think of the preservationist in this town. I would not want future owners of these properties to not understand the history of some of these places. And there are quite a lot of you go throughout the Finger Lakes. The Bat McGrath streak has been torn, kind of carved all throughout the Finger Lakes in various places, various bars. And so, Bat, if you're listening, we're all thinking about Bat McGrath, who is playing what could be his last show in Rochester tomorrow night. He has cancer. He's choosing to decline treatment. And he's back for tomorrow night. Unfortunately, don't show up at the Lyric. I don't think they Doug, you were saying they're well oversold, huh?
Yeah, it was a fairly overwhelming response. I was talking to Jeff about it earlier, that we just didn't know what we needed. A month ago, the 26th of December, when he finally decided, I'm going to do this, it's going to be 1 month to the day afterward. We didn't have a theater. We didn't have ticketing. We didn't have lighting. We didn't have sound. The folks at the Lyric Theater, by the way, have been great. That place is a treasure. And they've been great to work with, and they made it happen. And we're to the point, we have one of those terrible problems, I guess, in that we've had to say no to a whole bunch of people who probably should be there, but we just didn't know, you know, did we need 200 seats or did we need 1,500? Did we need, and it was talked about. Some people said, why isn't he doing a matinee on Sunday? And he just wasn't sure how he was going to feel, so we decided to make it just a one-night event.
Can't blame someone in that spot, but just an overwhelming community response. So as we get ready for break, Mike Black, you were saying that, you know, She's Gone is an example of a song that, you know, you're going back, you and Jeff were putting this beautiful piece together, and you're going back over the catalog, and you see Bat's name on it. Tell me that story.
Yeah, it's interesting, because that is probably one of my most all-time favorite Don Potter vocals. It's just chilling, and when they reprised it in 2007, all that came back to me. It still is just one of the most beautiful songs ever. It's heart-wrenching. It just really hits your soul. And so I'm pulling tracks and going through things, and I take one of Bat's later albums where it's all acoustic. It's just him and a guitar, and I'm see She's Gone. It's, oh, he's covering the Don Potter song. And I start playing it, and I'm hearing this different sound to it. I said, this is really haunting. It's beautiful in its own right. And then I check, because I have to enter in the data for our metadata in the audio playback system, and I see the credits are Mangione and McGrath. And immediately I came to this realization that was not a Don Potter song. It was a Bat McGrath song.
It was Chuck Mangione composed the music, and as Bat has told me, they were really struggling to get a lyric for it. And I think Chuck had written some lyrics, or Don had, and then Bat said, hey, you can try this. And Don, I think, took it to Chuck, and that is how it happened. But I agree with you. That song is so many ways.
And I want to just share one personal thing, because it really helped, and this is going to sound really hokey and corny, and my wife, if she's listening, will probably get on my case. But when I was growing up, you always have different relationships, and some would turn out horrible, and I would put that record on, and when I'd hear that song, it would just be so consoling to me, basically to help me get over these, make me feel sorry for myself for a while, and then, go get a beer, and then afterwards, I would say, yeah, I feel better after hearing this.
Well, let's listen as we go to our only break of the hour. We're going to come back with Doug Emblidge from 13 Wham, Jeff Spivak, a journalist, reporter, and WXXI contributor. Mike Black is the radio program manager here at WXXI, talking about the remarkable career of Bat McGrath and looking forward to tomorrow night's performance here in Rochester. As we go to break, let's listen to She's Gone with the Don Potter vocal from Friends in Love in 1970. And when we come back from break, you will hear some of the Bat version.
Out somewhere inside my head, a sound remains and tells me with each lonely night she's gone. By not looking for the reason why, and yet I could have been much more a man. Of my soul makes you still exist. How could you not be what I dreamed?
I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, we talk a lot about veganism, about plant-based eating on Connections, and sometimes we hear from listeners who say, look, it's easy to talk about that. It's a lot harder to do it on a budget, and there are a lot of people living on very tight means. So veganism on a budget and understanding all of the complexities on Monday.
Somewhere inside my head a sound
she's gone.
So there's She's Gone, a couple of versions of She's Gone, and our thanks to Mike Black for reminding us. Well, I mean, I think that was one of the ones on Doug's list this morning. There's such a long list of Bat McGrath's work, and Jeff, I really appreciate the fact that you highlighted the fact that he has been making music for a long time now, and you know, you have a real fondness for the entire catalog, even the most recent stuff included.
Yeah, I was late to the game on that, and I talked to Bat many times about his past, and the arc of his life is very interesting. And he started out as, you know, with a band called the Showstoppers, and they were of an era. It was coming out of the Vietnam. Well, it was the Vietnam War was going on, and they were the hippies. They were, you know, the guys living in Little Italy, and there was a lot of tension at that time. And Bat told me once that they kept a shotgun by the door, just in case, you know, some of the other viewpoints on the Vietnam War came to their door. So there was a lot of almost things you could connect with today. And anyway, but watching him develop, looking back now and seeing, I see a consistency, but I also see this is a guy that really represents a lot of things that have happened in this country in the last 40 years. Mm-hmm. And as he grew older and he found what he wanted in life, which was a partner and his wife, Tricia, and moving to a pretty remote little cabin, a very nice place, by the way, on the side of a mountain outside of Nashville, although because of the trees, he can't see Nashville, and Nashville can't see him, and I think he's pretty happy with that. Mm-hmm. But he built the life that he wanted, and it took him a while to find it because he did go through some interesting phases.
He said in a story I was talking to him last month where he said, when I was in high school or junior high, they did one of those things, what do you want to be when you grow up? He says, I'd like to play music and live on a farm.
And that's what he got.
He's playing music and he lives on a farm.
I was reading some of the listener remarks, and on Jeff's point about what it would have been like at the beginning of Bat's career, even looking at Friends and Love, T.C. writes about Friends and Love concert in 1970. He says, you have to picture the situation here. The Vietnam War was fully on at this point. To a young person at the time, I was 14 during Friends and Love. It seemed like the world outside my little life was exploding. War, riots, even assassinations. Yet also there was great promise. We were walking on the moon. The Beatles were still together. The music on the radio was remarkable at that time. It was an amazing American moment. That's from T.C. And I think, you know, it's easy to sort of kind of group those things together. But I do think in this way, Jeff, you look back at Friends and Love, I hope we never lose. I hope WXXI plays that footage periodically forever because people are asking, re-release it, you know, put it out in different formats here. Do you think we'll have staying power the way it does now almost 50 years later?
Friends and Love?
Yeah.
I like it, and it's held up.
I mean, it's good on its own. Forget sort of the context.
The sentiments aren't going to be going away. The ideas they're talking about.
I don't
know.
Have you been on Twitter lately? Sentiments, maybe.
Well, you mentioned some of the people who were in that, and it was a long list, but two names that didn't get mentioned, Steve Gadd and Tony Levin, were both there as well.
By the way.
And I'll share this.
Who is this Steve Gadd?
I don't know. I think he wants to be a drummer someday.
Yeah, yeah.
And Tony Levin is to the bass what Steve Gadd is to drums in a lot of ways. But I had this idea, and I don't mind sharing it because I want it to happen, not for profit or anything like that, but because we have this footage from WXXI, I've actually reached out about doing a documentary about Friends and Love, what it meant in the political sense, but also what it meant to music in terms of who came out of that show. My dream was to have it for the Jazz Fest in 2020 when it's the 50th anniversary,
yeah,
and to be able to show it at the Little and put this thing together. And so I'm trying.
Don't write a check you can't cash.
I'm trying. Yeah. Well, we're trying to do it. We got the people who are here. We can talk to them, you know, and most of them are still here. We can talk to them about the memories. We can talk to the 2 million people who were at the concert.
The 2 million people, including Mike Black. No, serious question, though, and I want to ask all of you this. you know, 1970, I'm taking TC's email, and I'm also thinking about how now, you know, Jeff, you're right. The sentiments of friends and love will always be, you know, relatable. But are we comfortable enough to put the word love in a con? I love that they did that. I mean, in many ways, just the fact that you called it friends and love was something beautiful. It was straightforward. It seemed unafraid. I don't know if we're quite that comfortable with that.
We are afraid now, aren't we?
That's what worries me. Do you think?
I think we are afraid. We are. We don't know what the person next to us is thinking anymore, and we're being very careful about what we say now. Well, we're not being careful because, you know, there's an awful lot of really nasty things being said these days. But I worry about the division, and it feels like what was happening back then. So in that respect, perhaps relevant, I don't know, but because I don't know where we're going right now for the next year or two.
Mike, you were there. I mean, you were 10. I wonder how it felt.
Mm-hmm. You know, and echoing some of the sentiment, I mean, I you know, some of my memories, particularly back, you know, at that time period, you know, prior in the late 60s and in early 70s, you know, you remember the evening news and the fact that there would be a graphic every night of the body count or the injured. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as somebody that was now not knowing if the war was ever going to end, are we going to be drafted? Are we going to be doing that? Mm-hmm. And this concert, especially in retrospect and seeing, you know, the some of the thematic elements and the fact of how, to be honest, everybody worked together to make this beautiful evening happen. It does, I think it really is, would hold true. I think seeing it again, 2007 when it was redone, it was kind of like nothing had changed. It was just a beautiful event, an evening. Everybody came together. They wouldn't let, it had a hard time letting them finish the concert. They kept on doing encore after encore after encore of the end of the show. It just kept going. They kept on reprising pieces of it. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think there is a concern. I think there is a lack of trust that people have. You know, is the person next to you going to do something awful? But at the same instance, we're all humans, and I still have a very big optimism that no matter who you are, where you're from, what you look like, you can find some unifying concept. And so when we travel or go someplace else, you know, just had a great experience in Ireland where we stayed in Airbnb, and, you know, the people didn't have to, but we're sitting in their living room having whiskey. They're cleaning out his whiskey cabinet. That doesn't happen on a day-to-day basis, at least in this country, things like that. I do have a lot of hope that people generally are good. And that sentiment, I don't think, has died yet. We just have to try to find it.
You can only control your own circle. So you model what you hope the world can be just to the people who are around you, and that's where you can control things, I think. But talk about friends, using love in the thing. I mean, remember, it was a flower power type of motif, too. Saying that there were flowers, and, you know, that was the set. It was very...
And the clothing.
Oh, my gosh.
If you've got the video, the video is still out there, but you see the video with the bell bottoms and the the paisleys and everything else that people wore.
Yeah, but in 1970, when, you know, they're doing this show, it's the same year that... you know, four students get shot dead at Kent State, and I grew up, like, you know, 30 miles from there. And I remember what was going on at the time, even though I was a kid. It was like what was being said in my house by people. It was like, you know, those dirty students, they should be in class. Hmm. No comment about, well, you shouldn't be shooting students on a college campus. Hmm. So we had this incredible dichotomy that maybe after time, it went away, and maybe you feel like it's back again now, but maybe that's a sign that we'll pull it together again. That's as optimistic as I can get.
I was going to say, Spivak is giving me optimism.
It'll pass in a moment.
Let me read a couple of emails while Jeff tries to pass it like a bit of sort of off food, perhaps. This is from Catherine in Geneva, and she says, Friends in Love was a really personal and real experience. In particular, I remember Bat's warmth and wry humor. Made me feel that he could be a friend even though I was pretty young at the time. I still remember him telling about their pet raccoon who was very clean. He'd lick you first and then he'd bite. She says, I think of him every time I drive by the Blue Eagle. Any chance tomorrow's concert will be videotaped? It was sold out before I heard about it. Warm wishes to Bat. I don't know about any videotaping.
Many offered, and Bat in the end said that, you know what, let's just make it as good as we can make it for the folks who are able to be there. And I think there will be. I know a local photographer, friend of Bat's, in fact, the guy who took the Blue Eagle album cover, Chris Maggio, is going to be there, and some other friends, Gary Gear as well. But I think they're going to do something, and then it will be up to Bat. It's going to be very rudimentary, very basic, very, just simple. And what Bat decides to do with it is his call.
Chris writes, thank you, Bat. You are a big part of my appreciation for singers and songwriters. Thanks for the memories and music. We will see you tomorrow evening at the Lyric Theater. And Donna says, I took my children to the Friends in Love concert in 70. They are now 56 and 58 years old, and they said it was one of their most memorable experiences. They loved Bat McGrath. You know, there's so many different stories that we won't have time to tell, but there's a song called Funny Place. I just want to listen to a little bit here because he wrote this with Pat Alger. Is that right?
Pat Alger, who wrote a lot of Garth Brooks hits. And I just thought this, I've always thought this was just a clever, catchy song.
Let's listen to a little bit of Funny Place.
Riding on the dog through Oklahoma to the coast, with a backpack full of fears and a head full of ideas, I set my sights upon what I had to do, discover gold or at least someone like you. It didn't take me long to learn good friends are hard to find. What a price to pay, each wrong turn that I made. Like a mother lode, I chanced to stumble on. I struck it rich the day you came along. Ain't it crazy how this world's a funny place? About the time your best laid plans fly off into space, you find a wild card up your sleeve just when you need an ace. Ain't it funny how this world's a crazy place?
This funny place, Bat McGrath, written with Pat Alger. My sentiment, Doug, listening to stuff like this is, Bat is one of the truly nice, and I don't, again, this is going to sound syrupy, he's one of the truly nice people that I've had the pleasure to meet. But he could also be, and not to say it's in the title of the song, funny. He could be very witty, very clever with his lyrics, but never mean, never gratuitous, didn't take shots unnecessarily. That is a spirit that I hope that I will remember about him and check myself when I feel like I need to put a hard edge in something. Because he never seemed to ever feel the need for that.
The lyric, the thing on that song, the first line is, riding on the dog. Anybody know what that is? I know Jeff does. That's the Greyhound, a Greyhound bus, and apparently that's slang for riding the Greyhound bus. And that usually indicates, you know, a certain point in your life. If you're riding a Greyhound through Oklahoma out to California, you know, it says a lot. Right off the bat, that song sets, I'm riding on the dog through Oklahoma to the coast. And I just always loved that line.
Jeff?
He is a very warm man, and I've visited his home twice in Nashville and stayed a few nights, and he's so welcoming, and at the same time, it's like he doesn't feel like he's putting out for you. He's like, yeah, go drive down the road there, and there's a hardware store. You can get an egg sandwich and bag of fertilizer for the tomatoes. You know, very, very down to earth and funny, and both he and Trish, very, very relaxed people.
Well, we'll close the program. There's so many songs you could use. We got The Spy. We'll listen to The Spy. But as we get ready, if you're going to go to the Lyric Theater tomorrow night, you got to have tickets already. It is sold out. But before we do it, some final words from Doug Embledge, who has helped put together this program tomorrow night, and is such good friends with Bat. Are you sort of slowly letting it hit you that this is real, or do you think that'll take some time?
I just think he makes it easier for everybody who cares about him. I think that's kind of the thing. He's just like, his last words when I left Nashville last month were, "Don't worry, we got this," and referring to his fight. So if he's got it, then we better too.
Bat, if you're listening, we love you, and we are not afraid to say it. Thank you to Bat McGrath, who is going to play in Rochester tomorrow night and could be his last Rochester concert. Doug Embledge, Jeff Spivak, Mike Black, I've really enjoyed the conversation. I thought it was a really fitting way to close the week. Thank you for sharing your experiences and telling these stories. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's listen a little Bat as we close it out. Thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. If you can't go to the Lyric tomorrow, talk to somebody who will. I'm sure it's going to be special, and we'll talk to you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.
It just made sense that I'd be at the Village Inn while she was at her friend's. Hey, flirting with that French girl that she thought once caught